Yes. Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Stay tuned because what you don't know about genitals may surprise you. My guest is Sherry Winston, and she's going to inform us, and her book is Succulent Sex Craft. It's a wonderful book, just newly published. Welcome to this program, Sherry.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Yes, well, I heard you present at the ASEC conference in Monterey, California last June. ASEC stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And Sherry was a wonderful presenter.
Thank you. She's
a renowned sexuality teacher, and her classes are celebrated, and I can understand why, for their humor, comfort, and quality. And she's also been a nurse, midwife, gynecology practitioner, registered nurse, childbirth educator, massage therapist, and most importantly, at least for our discussion today, a student of the esoteric erotic arts. You have a wonderful resume, don't you?
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of fun getting all that education. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, because as we have talked about off the air, it's been a whole learning journey. And you're a curious person, and you always have been.
So boy, is that the truth.
Yeah, so this is perfect. This is perfect for you, this career that you've carved out for yourself.
It is, because I really remain a perpetual student. I'm mm-hmm. always wanting to learn more, and this has certainly been an area of interest
mm-hmm.
for most of my life, and you know, there's just always more to learn, so I'm fascinated by this topic. Sex, yeah.
Well, and I really liked your presentation in Monterey, California, June the 7th, because going to conferences for some 30 years, so that's a lot of conferences,
mm-hmm.
I don't often learn new things. But I
mm-hmm.
did with yours because, as you put it, you went on a hunt for buried treasure or pleasures, right?
And pleasure.
Yeah. Did you say pleasure? I wrote it down as treasure, but I think it's both.
It's Buried Pleasure is the subtitle, and a lot of people make that. But, yes, it's the hunt for buried pleasure, you know.
Pleasure, right.
Oh, yeah. When I started being a midwife, mind you, at that point I was a massage therapist, a childbirth educator, an RN, you know, a bachelor's in nursing with a focus in, you know, obstetrics, and then a couple years of experience, and then my advanced practice as a nurse midwife and gynecology practitioner. So I had studied female genitalia extensively, and I would have told you at that point I really knew what was there. I knew my way around down there, and I really thought that was true. And I was really shocked when I came across something that showed me that there were parts I'd never heard of. I was astounded, but this is a book called New View of a Woman's Body.
Mm-hmm.
And it described vestibular bulbs, for example.
Oh, yes, that was the part of your talk that really stood out.
I never heard of them. And I literally remember reading the book, going, "What? You're kidding?" And then actually mm-hmm. going into my bedroom and looking in the mirror and doing what I would call my homework assignment.
Yes.
Or my home play.
Home play.
And there, you know, I was able to find what they were talking about. And that's what got me started. I said, well, if I could have missed these, and the vestibular bulbs are made of erectile tissue, as are
mm-hmm.
a number of other structures, so they get engorged and they get big, and I literally was like, how did I miss this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did I spend all these years with my own sexuality, with partners, with studying this, studying women's bodies and birth and all this? How did I do this, all these years, and not know these were here?
And we'll come back to that, but I just wanted to insert here that you are a fine artist, and I learned off the air that you went to art school, because throughout the book, you have great drawings that you've done of the anatomy. So we can see these vestibular bulbs and the legs of the clit, 3 to 4 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said in your lecture to us in June, when these are engorged, penetration feels extra good. We want that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Thanks for the comments about the art. I did start out as an artist and then gave that up, but it was always an interest of me, particularly illustration, and I did study some biological illustration, but it was just for entertainment, I thought, at that point, just because I love
mm-hmm.
doing it. So it was such a joy to me to be able to do my own anatomy illustrations because, it's just delightful to me. And also to collect all of the art that's in the book.
I'm glad you're bringing that up because that's fascinating. So tell us a little bit about the collection process because you have an amazing collection of art in your book, both more recent but a lot of older pieces.
Well, pretty much most of the art, in the new book, in Succulent Sex Craft, I also have contemporary artists that generously shared their work, but
mm-hmm.
the rest of the illustrations that aren't mine and aren't theirs, and in my first book, in Women's Anatomy, that's all public domain artwork. So I,
mm-hmm.
again, I started collecting that a decade before I had any inkling I would be using it for anything. I just loved it. It's so idiosyncratic, you know,
very prescient of you.
Yeah, They're
good
funny,
for you, Sherry.
Some of them, you know. They're interesting. They're unique. They have such a different artistic perspective than our current erotic, visual, porn-centered aesthetic. So,
say a little more about that, Sherry, because that is certainly true. What are some of the features of some of this art that goes back to the 1700s, 1800s?
Well, one thing, first of all, a lot of it is very fun. There's this fun, frolicsome, almost an innocence to it, to some of them that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's others. One of the ways erotic art would be allowed in the culture was if it was a bit, if they were hinting that it was sort of a morality tale. So there's a lot of pieces of art where there's little devils and demons and things, you know,
mm-hmm.
that are
mm-hmm.
enticing, you know, the innocent maidens.
mm-hmm.
You know, sort of a, you know, there's happy dancing penises and flying vulvas and right, they're just
it's very fantastic.
And you remember there wouldn't have been a culture where most of these artists were seeing other erotic art, you know, so it was their own vision, whereas now we all see, you know, tons of porn and pornified images, whether we want to or not. And so we have this sort of shared idea of what it should look like, and
mm-hmm.
they didn't have that, so it was their own unique vision.
Unique vision, yes. So, you talk in your book, Succulent Sex Craft, subtitle, Your Hands-On Guide to Erotic Play and Practice for Men and Women, Singles and Partners. And indeed, it is all of that. So, you talk about something that you trademarked, holistic sexuality. So, please tell us more about holistic sexuality.
Well, to me, our sexuality is a microcosm of everything that we are. And so to me, our sexuality is about, it's my genetics, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's millions of years of evolutionary sexual template. It's every moment of learning that I've done, every moment of my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's about my relationship with my body. It's about my relationship with my gender and my orientation. We started learning about sex when we were born.
That's right.
Right? And how our genitals were handled when our diapers were changed. You know,
mm-hmm.
before we even had language, and how our families modeled sexuality or comfort with their body or discomfort, and we absorbed all that. And so to me, our sexuality is this unique fingerprint, but it's this a very complex relationship we have with ourselves. But then it's also about the connection and relationship we have with everything and everyone around us. So it's how do we educate our children, and what kind of role models we're putting out in the world, and what's going on in our sexual health care system, or what do we have? A sickness care system is what we mostly have,
yeah, really.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's also even planetary, because to me, our sexuality connects us to all life on this planet. And so mm-hmm. when I say holistic, I mean from the microcosm to the macrocosm, because, you know, we need some shift in consciousness on
yes.
the planet right now. So we recognize that we're all connected, and that we're in a big web, and you can't separate that out, and how we live and how we behave and what we buy and how we consume. All of this affects the whole planet. And so I actually look at sexual empowerment as part of that consciousness shift.
Yes, you say in your book, my life's purpose is to be an agent of transformation and empowerment. And clearly, you're living up to your life's purpose. It's really wonderful, Sherry. The book is so original and helpful. And you also write, holistic sexuality isn't only for people with sexual problems. It's for anyone who aspires to more connection, intimacy, mm. and ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
You know,
yes.
I mean, I think our sexuality is very much like learning to play an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we all have natural musical ability, but if you want to, you can develop mastery.
Mm.
And our sexuality is like that. So, yes, there mm-hmm. are people who have challenges, and I want them to learn what they need. So women who've never had orgasms can learn to have them,
mm-hmm.
for example. But also, if you're having perfectly great orgasms right now, you could learn how to have spectacular ones.
Or maybe multiple ones.
Or maybe ones that go on for an hour.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other high like it.
There really isn't, is there?
No, you know, and you talk about ecstasy and mm-hmm. trances, and that's the way you get there.
Well, you know, it's one way.
I think it's one of the easy ways.
I mean, I think it's one of the easiest templates we have to get ecstatic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But because of what we've learned, our upbringing, our experiences, for many people, that path is blocked.
Mm-hmm.
We can learn to unblock it, and we can learn to widen the path, and we can learn to make it a really easy journey
mm-hmm.
From mundane reality. I'm sitting here, you know, chatting with you, to a really amazing ecstatic state, and we can learn how to get
and
there.
And people really can learn that from getting your book or going to getsexcrafty.com. And your website is brilliant, and I know with your partner, Carl.
Right. Let me just correct the URL. So that would be go to succulentsexcraft.com.
Oh, did I? Okay, succulentsexcraft.com.
Get Sexcrafty mm. is for people who've already bought the book and who want more.
Okay, I'm so sorry. So
that's
all right.
Okay. It's complicated.
All right. But anyway, people who've bought the book, because mm-hmm. on page 9 you have GetSexCrafty.com, it's alive, it's interactive.
Yeah, I had too much stuff. I mean, it's already a big book, and I envisioned that there'd be this web component, which there is, and that it's going to be something that's going to keep growing. And so not only if you buy the book do you get the book, but you can go to the website. Right now there's 25 additional practices and ideas and pieces on there, and I'm just going to keep adding to it, and hopefully people who have bought the book and want more, or at some point maybe we'll create some kind of community with it. I don't know what we'll do with it, but right now there's
your book
this living,
is
growing.
Yeah. It's just out, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
So you have your hands-on guides to practices, exercises, and games, along with lots of suggestions for play,
mm-hmm.
for solo play, partner play, or both, and you give a lot of hot and juicy tips, and divine pleasure, and then food for thought, and you even have some just wonderful sections, word nerd, I like that, where you give us the origins of words.
I'm fascinated by that, too. I mean, here's mm-hmm. a one. Masturbation, the word masturbation,
yes.
the
mm-hmm.
Latin means to pollute with your hand.
Yes, yeah, so and that's no wonder you don't like the word masturbation. I never have either that much, and now I know why.
It's not a yummy word to start with. It's not a yummy sounding word, but then you find out what the Latin is, and you're like, oh, I don't want to use that word. That's why I say solo sex or mm-hmm. self-pleasuring.
Self-pleasuring.
You know, positive.
Yeah, more positive. And, because we're not polluting ourselves when we touch our own genitals. We're giving ourselves pleasure.
Right, we're loving ourselves.
And loving ourselves.
And taking care of ourselves and
right.
learning, right? Our solo sex is the best place we can learn how to expand our avenues and discover new pathways and what works. And, I mean, you know, we have so much shame about solo sex in our culture. So much shame, yeah.
For 11 years, I co-led two women's sexuality groups in California, and all with Dr. Maria Flaherty, and all of these women had experienced sexual trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in and out of the groups, but mostly they stayed, you know, a fairly long time. And they were at various stages of healing and recovery. But, of course, the first thing we suggested is that they spend some time self-pleasuring. Because you got to know how your own body responds, obviously. And so at the time, and this is several years ago, some of the women were kind of workaholics and they wanted to be mm-hmm. efficient and use their vibrators, which is good. I mean, it's fine. But then for transferring it to partner sex, we suggested, well, just try your fingers. Try your fingers instead of the sex toy and see what happens. Does that resonate for you in terms of how you teach, or no, not necessarily?
Big time. I mean, first of all, I have to go back to when I was a midwife and a clinician.
Yeah.
And I would have patients who would share with me, because when I took a sexual history, and I actually took a real sexual history where I'd ask them things like, so are you satisfied with your sex? Are you having orgasms? Mm-hmm. And I would have a lot of women who weren't, as I'm sure we're all aware. A substantial number of women have orgasm challenges. Probably somewhere around 10% of women have not yet experienced an orgasm.
Yep. That's
so
about right.
There's a lot of that. And when they would say that to me, I would say, the first thing I would say is, well, the place to start is with yourself and self-pleasuring. And some of them would look at me like I had two heads.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some would kind of shudder, like, ew, gross, you know. And so I used to take out my prescription pad and write on my prescription pad,
mm-hmm.
play with yourself minimum 3 times a week and hand it to them.
I love that.
Hopefully none of them showed up at the pharmacy with that. But yeah, I felt like they needed... they needed permission, you know, and I had the white coat, so, you know, I could give them permission to do that. And I'm sure with some of those women, it did help them make that step. And then the next piece of that is, what's the pathway we're going to use? And for a lot of women, a vibrator is a wonderful first pathway.
Absolutely.
A great way to learn how to have your orgasms. And the thing about paths, it's like a path through the woods. The first times you go, you wander through the woods and maybe you find like this fabulous swimming hole and you jump in and you get all wet and it's great. And the next time you want to go back, you're going to go the same way you went the first time, right? And then after a while, you develop a path, and that's good. A path is good. I know that I can go from, you know, from A to O. I just follow my path. But if I stay on the same path all the time, then it turns into a rut. And if I stay, if I keep going down the same rut, eventually it turns into a trench. And then I start to think there's no other way to get to this amazing place. But the truth is there's an infinity of pathways. And so think of the vibrator as a as one path, and then you want to start stepping off, just what you were saying. Start using your hands. Use the vibrator intermittently. Use your other tools, because we have this amazing toolkit inside each of us. We've got tools of the body like breathing and sound and movement, pelvic floor muscles particularly, and we have tools of the mind, our imagination and awareness. So use other tools, and you'll develop more pathways.
More pathways. More pathways are really good. And I have found that for women who have never had an orgasm, and then usually there's a connection that they haven't self-pleasured when they were teenagers or even in their early 20s. And so one theory is that the genital brain pathways haven't been laid down, the nerve pathways. At least that's what a urologist that I worked with at UCLA said. So it seems as though the vibrator can really jumpstart the orgasm, because I have worked with women who've never had an orgasm, never used a sex toy, and then given the right conditions, like setting the scene, having privacy, maybe reading erotica, and taking a bath before they get to that place, or showered, but they're relaxed. Anyway, the right conditions. And then
those are all
having
tools.
Extra vibrations can really, really jumpstart that orgasm.
Yeah, what I would say about the nerve pathways, the nerve pathways are part of our hardware. They're there. So they're not it's not that they're not there. But the more we use the pathway, the easier it gets for the nerve impulses to travel. And we can literally develop new connections. Neuroplasticity is how our brain continues to rewire. And so when we're learning, when we're first learning something, it's about using a pathway that's already there, where the information goes, you know, travels, you know, say, from your genitals to your brain, or from your breast, or from your earlobe, or from your imagination, travels down those pathways. So the more we use those pathways, the easier it is for the nerve impulses. And we can create more pathways. So that's why someone maybe who's had a stroke and has lost the ability to maybe they've lost the ability to speak. They can relearn speech using another part of their brain, for example. Or people who are quadriplegic or paraplegic can learn to have orgasms from stimulation of their mouth or stimulation of their of their hand.
So when you realize the brain plus plasticity, right?
Yeah, so that neuroplasticity. So learning has got those two components, using the pathways, the neurological pathways that are already there, and making them like a stream, like clearing the debris out of a stream so the nerve impulses flow faster, quicker, and easier down the paths that are already there, and developing more pathways. That's
so
learning.
This is very good for people listening who may be discouraged, women who say, oh, will I ever have an orgasm, especially an orgasm with a partner, because I get female clients like that. They can manage to have an orgasm alone, but with a partner, that maybe requires an additional amount of talk between the two of us. But
it's more skills. It's more skill sets.
It's more skill sets. Like, that's a very nice way to put it, yes.
It's like learning how to play an instrument by yourself, which is different from playing a duet with a partner.
Yeah. But I think it's the way you described it is very helpful, that the nerve pathways are our hardware, and they're already there. So the more we use this, the more we practice and have fun. And this is really, really fun home play, after all.
Right.
You know, if people can get into the right state, they have to be in the right state and do some breathing and do some relaxing and maybe change some of their thoughts, because some of these people have been shamed a lot about sexuality.
Exactly what I'm talking about using our different toolkits. So part of that, we've got the toolkit in our mind, and how do we reprogram that? So instead of having a negative story about our body, for example, that would be one that we... A lot of negative stories about our body. It's not right. It's not good enough. It doesn't look right. It doesn't operate right. Whatever. You know, we've got all those. Or we can change that story so we can reprogram our thinking. That's one toolkit. Learning to use breath is another tool that we have. So, I mean, the great thing is we've got all these tools.
Yeah.
And it's just about learning how to consciously use them, because we're actually already using some of them. Right? We already... know that if we're, you know, tense or stressed, we can take a couple of deep breaths and that will calm us down. Like, we do this with our kids, right? They get upset. We go, take a couple deep breaths, honey.
That's right.
Calm down. Right? We know that. But then we can consciously apply that to our sexual experience, where we say to ourselves, okay, honey, let's take a couple deep breaths and calm down.
Yeah, calm down.
Let's breathe a little faster and get more excited.
Yeah, breathing is so important for calming down and for sexual excitement as well. To know how to breathe. And you give lots of suggestions in your book.
I do.
Sexcraft.
The thing about arousal is it's a combination of relaxation and excitement.
Yes, it is.
And we tend to think of it as just excitement.
Say a little more about that. We're going to go to a break in a couple of minutes on the half-hour break. But arousal really is a combination of excitement and a relaxation.
Exactly. You can think of it as a dance between the two. Because if you're too excited, you're just tense and anxious. If you're too relaxed, you're just going to fall asleep.
Right.
So it's a dance between the two. We need to relax to get present, to get into our body, to get centered, and then we want to let the arousal and the excitement to happen, and then we can relax into that excitement, and then it expands. And then
when we come back from the break, you and I are going to talk, you mostly, about the female erectile network, because everything gets better in that network when a woman is aroused, relaxed and aroused. But especially aroused. And this is where I learned some things. And just as you said at closer to the top of the show, that that you really learned a lot from, what was the book you mentioned? Having to do with the vestibular bulbs and all that.
New View of a Woman's Body. It came out in the early 80s.
Okay.
It was by the Federation of Feminist Healthcare Workers or something. And it was so radical and had stuff in it that was just...
In the 80s. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So... Sherry Winston and I are going to talk about the female erectile network. Stay tuned, because you're going to learn a lot, like did you know about Kira? I love Kira. Am I pronouncing it right, I hope?
Kira, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, good.
I mean,
good.
We just call them legs also.
So we'll come back and talk about that. So John, our wonderful producer, will take us to the break, and we'll be right back. I'm back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm here with Sherry Winston, and we are going to discuss the female erectile network. We need to talk more about female genitals. I wanted to share with you all that Adele Clark, who is an associate professor of sociology at the University of California, San Francisco, searched the database Medline and found 1,611 articles on the penis, but only 78 on the clitoris. What does that tell us? That we're not paying enough attention to women. And, of course, it's changing some now because, but a lot of men in research, and, of course, we got the Viagra and Cialis up and going for guys because most of the medical researchers were men. I'm making generalizations, but there is some truth to this. So we need a little more attention for women. And
you know, that's true in the whole healthcare system, that if you look at studies, there have been a lot of studies where they only have males as participants.
Yes, including heart disease, right?
Exactly, where they studied certain medications, only studied them in men, and then were surprised to discover, oh, they had all kinds of side effects in women that they didn't have. So we still have a lot more money that goes in to diseases and conditions and issues affecting only men than we do only women or both. So it's a generalization, but it's just an accurate one, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, so in your lecture last May for ASEC, last June, you talked about the female erectile network, and how we have as women just as many erectile parts as men do. Can you expand on that some?
I would be so happy to.
So, yes.
You know, when I first got a hold of a copy of Our Bodies Ourselves, I was a teenager. I was very lucky. My mother brought us home.
Yeah.
And I remember going right to the genital pages.
Because you were such a curious, precocious kid.
I was. I was so curious. I wanted to know what all my parts were called, and I remember looking, and then I remember, you know, looking at the guy parts, and I actually remember thinking, first I remember thinking, clitoris. Oh, that's what that's called. Great. Mm-hmm. I had discovered it. I didn't know its name yet. But then I remember looking at the penis and thinking, wow, guys have a lot more stuff.
Stuff.
You know, a lot more equipment.
Yeah.
And so I'm now here to tell you all that that's just not true, that pound for pound, inch for inch, women have just as much erectile tissue as men do. And what I knew of as the clitoris is actually the head of the clitoris. It's actually only a part of the clitoris, and it is indeed the jewel of the network, the gem in the crown of erectile tissue. It's an amazingly sensitive, fabulous structure, but it's only part of the network. There's a set of separate but interconnected erectile structures. And so there are three parts of the clitoris. There's the part we know about, the head. There's the shaft or body, which is under the hood. And then the clitoris has legs, or crura, which are about 3 or 4 inches long, and an anchor of the clitoris to the bone, the bony arch of the pubis. So, but that's not all. There's also the vestibular bulbs, which are two big wads of erectile tissue that are under the labia on either side of the vaginal opening. Mm-hmm. And they're like an upside-down comma. The bottom part is fat, and then they get thinner up at the top, and they literally connect to the shaft of the clitoris. And those vestibular bulbs are the first thing that I learned about that was more than I thought I had had. And what I discovered is that when those bulbs are big and puffy, it feels much more fabulous to have something inside the vagina.
Right. So it's much better for penetration. And maybe I'm making this up, but my fiancé and I really enjoyed what I think you said in June in Monterey, that munching on the labia, the outer labia, can be very stimulating. And Yeah?
Well, both. I mean, yeah. The bulbs are under the outer labia. So playing with the outer labia, especially if you're kind of pressing down and playing with the tissue underneath, is very stimulating. Mm-hmm. And then the inner labia are extremely sensitive. And even though they're not officially erectile tissue, they actually have some erectile capillaries, some of the specialized mm-hmm. blood vessels. And so they can become extremely sensitive. They swell. They're very, very pleasurable. So there's all of that to play with. And then there's more, right?
So yes. Talk about the more.
That's all the stuff you can get to sort of from the outside. And for most women, our arousal tends to go from outside to inside. So it's really good to start with the whole body and the mm-hmm. less erogenous zones and then get to the more sensitive parts and then get to the genitals. And then when you're at the genitals, play with the outer parts that we just described. Mm-hmm. And then it's high-level arousal, when all the outer parts are nice and swollen and engorged, then when you go inside, you can discover there's two more areas of erectile tissue. There's the urethral sponge, which mm-hmm. is a tube of erectile tissue that surrounds the cylinder, the tube of the urethra. So the urethra is the pee tube. It goes from your bladder to
right.
your pee hole. To be very scientific about it.
Yeah.
And you can think of that that erectile tissue as like the roll of paper towels. Mm. So the urethra is like the cardboard cylinder in the center, and the paper towels are the erectile tissue. So when it's mm-hmm. not engorged, it's like you're kind of near the end of the roll of the paper towels.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's been properly attended to and stimulated and engorged, it's like a brand new jumbo roll of paper towels.
Yes.
Yeah, so you can access that from through the roof of the vagina. It's just on top of the roof of the vagina. And also from the outer parts, you can get it sort of the end of the roll of paper towels, that area right around the urethral opening. So that's, and that's what people are currently calling the G-spot, is the bottom
yes.
of that tube. So the G-spot isn't a spot, and it doesn't really exist as its own structure, but it is the bottom of the roll of paper towels that you can access through the vagina.
So once the woman is really aroused,
uh-huh.
then stimulation of her G-spot, which isn't, as you said, a real spot, but mm-hmm. can just feel so much better. And also the entrance to her vagina thickens a bit
mm-hmm.
when she's aroused, right? And then
right. Well, when the bulbs puff up,
uh-huh.
they help create these big puffy wads of tissue right just at the entrance of the vagina.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, anytime something's in your vagina and it doesn't feel fabulous, you're not aroused enough.
Exactly. And then also, as I understand it, the uterus, and you talked in your ASEC talk about the uterus, but the uterus needs to lift up and away
mm-hmm.
from the top of the cervix for it to be comfortable intercourse.
Let me get to that. Let me just, there's one
okay,
more
okay.
wad of erectile tissue, and I wouldn't want it to feel left out. There's
you're the expert here, so please, let's not leave anything out.
There's another wad of erectile tissue under the floor of the vagina.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the perineal sponge, and that's erectile tissue that's literally in the wall between the vaginal and anal canals.
Mm-hmm.
And so just for a moment, imagine if you have all of that erectile tissue engorged.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all the parts of the clitoris. You've got the vestibular bulbs on either side, the urethral sponge at the top, and the perineal sponge at the bottom. When all of those things are big and puffy and engorged, they form this wonderful circuit, this snug, expandable, stretchy, puffy cuff of erectile tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got all of that happening, then whatever is going on, whatever, once it's all engorged, then if you play with any of those parts, it's all going to feel way better.
And the woman's more likely to reach orgasm, too.
Much, much, much more likely.
Maybe multiply.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So full female engorgement, I think, is really what we should be aiming for in our sexual encounters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, beyond that,
yes,
there's the uterus. And
yes.
So the cervix is the part of the uterus that pokes into the back of the vagina.
Mm-hmm.
And during arousal, the whole uterus with its cervix, because that's part of it, literally moves up and forward.
Up and forward.
Up and forward. So it's the cervix is no longer sticking into the back of the vagina. It's up and forward, opening up the back of the vagina. So you get that nice sort of open bowl at the back of the vagina. The cervix isn't going to get knocked into during penetration.
Yeah,
because it's out of the way.
And that causes discomfort for some women.
Most women, that does not feel, it's not a good feeling for most of us. Most
right.
of us don't like that.
So with intercourse, the penis is banging on the cervix,
mm-mm,
which then bangs, hits the cervix, and if it hasn't moved up and away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then during orgasm, the uterus literally moves up and down. It literally pulses up and down, and the uterus itself is pulsing. So,
yes. Now, that's something I learned from your talk. That's another thing I learned.
Well, you know, and our attitude towards the uterus in this country and the medical attitude is that it does not have anything to do with sexual pleasure. And that's
Isn't that
one
stupid?
It is kind of dumb, but that's what doctors learn in school, and that's what they tell their patients.
That's why they do hysterectomies, not leaving the uterus.
More than any other country in the world, we do hysterectomies. We have the highest rate of hysterectomy by far.
The highest
and
rate.
Part
so doctors
of that,
aren't even, and I think sometimes they don't even tell their patients that they may have some sexual dysfunction or lack of arousal after their uteruses are taken out.
They don't know it. They don't tell their patients because they don't know.
I believe that that's true.
They learned in school that the uterus has nothing to do with sexual pleasure, and so they don't know that it's going to have an effect. And so it's not that they're not telling women. They literally themselves don't know.
Yeah.
It's a problem. And,
well,
you know,
it's
a big
problem. You know, I get lots of new clients who have been to MDs, and, you know, since I'm also a gerontologist, I work with older couples and their sexuality. So, I hear stories about medical doctors who say, oh, well, you know, you're over 55, so of course you're not going to enjoy sex.
Mm.
I mean, it's so dismissive and minimizing, it really makes me annoyed. But in good cases, they find me or they find somebody like you or, you know, where there can be some education, because this is just wrong. When we remain sexual, we have the quality of our lives are so much better when we remain sexual as we age.
We stay healthier, we live longer, all of
mm-hmm.
those things are true. But you also have to remember that most medical practitioners did not get any sex education in their training, which is appalling. I mean, they don't know how to take a sexual history. They're not comfortable talking about sex.
Mm-hmm.
They're misinformed.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it really goes back to how we educate our healthcare providers.
Mm-hmm.
And how we educate the public. I mean, we We don't have good education for our kids. We don't have good education for our young adults. We don't have good education for our seniors. We're just very benighted when it comes to sexual education in our culture. So,
well,
it's bad.
It's very, very sad. And, you know, a part of my work as a sex therapist is sex education. Your main work is as a sex educator.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. I guess coach, right?
Yeah, I do counseling and consultations mm-hmm. and coaching because, you know, I am a healthcare provider. And
right.
So I do work with people, you know, from that medical perspective, mm-hmm. and I do counseling and coaching for singles
right.
and couples and all sorts of things. But you know, I want to reach millions of people with this information. So
of course.
Teaching and the writing is really where
yes.
my biggest draw is. Yeah.
So, fortunately, you have agreed to return to this program in 2 weeks, so that will be on October 28th, and thank you for that, because there's so much more to talk about, and when you return, you're going to return with your life partner and business partner, Carl Frankel, and he helped you with this book, right?
He's been a writer and an editor and an entrepreneur and social responsible business person, and so he was so essential in helping me with this book. And because I wrote the first book, I wrote the second book, but being a writer has not been my work.
Your
right?
forte,
so,
yeah.
So he was so helpful and so essential and added so much that I did want to put his name on. And he's also now working in the realm of sexuality and relationship. He just came out with a new book called Secrets of the Sex Masters, where he
yes.
interviewed 16 sex experts, myself, I'm one of them, and wrote this wonderful book that's just so wise and accessible for people, for, you know, everything from, you know, from oral sex to energy sex and
mm-hmm.
all sorts of other wonderful things. So, so we're both going to come on to your show and we'll
talk about so much more. And then
yeah.
I'm hoping that he'll come on my show December the 9th, just mm-hmm. alone, and we'll talk about his Secrets of the Sex Masters, which is a whole nother subject. It's great.
Yes.
So, you spoke with me. We have, a few, 10 more minutes, something like that, a little less. You spoke with me off the air about clitoral versus vaginal orgasms. And a recent, what did you say? It was a recent, not study, but came out.
There was an article.
Yeah, an article. And they said there was no such thing. It was, and you said they were misrepresenting the science.
Well, let's frame it this way. So there's
okay.
been this debate that goes all the way back to, you know, Freud with vaginal versus clitoral orgasms and, mm-hmm. and, I think the whole thing is a little misguided in some way.
Mm-hmm.
There are orgasms, and there's a wide spectrum of orgasmic experiences we can have, men and women. And we can have orgasms that feel more genitally focused. We can have lovegasms, where it feels like it's centered in our heart, for example.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So the world of orgasm is a big world, a big realm.
Big world.
Now, for women, we can have orgasms that feel more clitorally focused. We can have orgasms that feel more vaginally or uterine or anally focused.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that there's a vaginal orgasm and a clitoral orgasm as if they're different things. There's this wonderful connected network of structures we have.
Mm-hmm.
We also have nerve pathways. So there's a major nerve pathway that goes to the more external parts of our genitals. So for women, that's more of the clitoral structures. For men, that's more penile.
Yeah.
And we also have nerve pathways that go inside to the deeper structures. Like we're just talking about how the uterus
yeah.
is a player.
Yes.
The prostate in men, the urethral sponge in women.
Mm-hmm.
We have more internal nerve pathways. Now,
mm-hmm.
if we get a lot of stimulation to the clitoral structures, we have a lot of stimulation of that pathway, we're most likely to experience an orgasm as being more focused in the clitoral and external genital structures. Mm-hmm. If we have more stimulation internally, we will stimulate the deeper nerve pathway and we will have orgasms that feel more internal or vaginal. Mm-hmm. And if we stimulate all of the nerve pathways, which is what I recommend,
right,
then we have an orgasm that feels really amazing, intense, and it's got all of that going for it.
And so maybe even more whole body.
Mm-hmm, right. We can, in fact, there's a a third pathway, the vagus nerve pathway,
yes,
which is a nerve that goes through our whole body, and this is why we can think off. We can have hands-off orgasms. These are all learnable skills. And again, the more pathways we use, the easier, the more intense, the more full spectrum our orgasms can be. So I think the kind of debate of clitoral versus vaginal is a little misguided.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other challenge is that, of course, the clitoris is the jewel in the crown. It is the most sensitive tissue. It is a main orgasmic trigger. And so for most women, we do need clitoral stimulation in order to have an orgasm. However, it doesn't necessarily have to be direct clitoral stimulation. For example, I can have hands-off orgasms where I can stimulate any part of my genitals without anything touching anything.
Mm-hmm.
We can have orgasms in our sleep, right, where no one's actually doing anything to us and we have orgasms. So
yes.
I think it's a little limited to think I have to have clitoral stimulation to have an orgasm. And for most women, it is our easiest path. It's our most assured path. It's the path that even when we're using other tools in our toolkit and other parts of our body, we are still stimulating that even if it's indirect.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece of this is,
mm-hmm,
as I'm sure you're well aware, most women don't have orgasms from intercourse. And a lot of women and their partners might think there's something wrong with that picture, that intercourse is the way we should be having orgasms, or it's the right way to have orgasms, or Freud would have said the mature way. And that's just, you know, let's just get beyond that. There's no right way or wrong way to have orgasms. For most women, intercourse is not the best way to learn to have orgasms. And learning to have orgasms with intercourse or with any other activity, learning to have orgasms from oral sex or learning to think yourself off, those are learnable skills. So women can learn to be more orgasmic with intercourse. With or without direct clitoral stimulation. There's nothing wrong with, during intercourse, one or the other partner stimulating the clitoris or using a vibrator or some other toy to do that, as well as this learning how to just use, like, your pelvic floor muscles to stimulate yourself. So the thing is, there's no right or wrong way to have orgasms. Clitoral versus vaginal is just the whole model, the whole math is misguided.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? It's there's all these orgasmic experiences that we can get to in lots of different ways. The clitoris is central to that experience. Most of the time, the easiest way to get there is some sort of direct clitoral stimulation. And we can learn to become orgasmic from anything, including intercourse. And the last sort of one little other piece of that is also about the way we have intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
The women are most commonly orgasmic from intercourse when they're on top. And the reason is, and we talked about that whole female erectile network, when we're on top, we don't tend to jump up and down on the penis.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When we're on top, we tend to kind of rock and grind and,
mm-hmm,
and we're,
get some
we're
clitoral
in contact.
Stimulation.
Right. So when our whole erectile network is engorged before we have intercourse, and then we're on top, that network is in contact with a lot of our partner's body.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're getting lots of stimulation that way. So once we realize that, then we can go, oh, well, even in other positions, even when we're in a position when the man is on top, if he does more rocking and moves the, where he's in contact with a well-engorged erectile network of his partner, she's much more likely to be orgasmic that way. If he's doing more of the in-and-out thrusting, that doesn't stimulate things as well. Although at high-level arousal, when the female erectile network is really engorged, and women know how to use their other tools like breathing and sound and so forth, then that in-and-out kind of pounding, you know, kind of getting the nerve endings all the way at the back of the vagina can be really arousing and stimulating as well.
Really, really exciting.
Sherry, a time and a place for everything.
Yes, and we need to end this because they like me to stop a few minutes before the top of the hour. So thank you so much. I'm delighted you're going to be back with your partner, Carl Frankel, in 2 weeks, October 28th. And thank you very much, Sherry. This has been just so illuminating. And
thank you.
You really give good radio. No question
about
it.
Really a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. And next week, everybody, Dr. Tammy, who is a medical doctor, will be on the show. And we're going to talk more about female and male sexuality. So please join us. Thank you. Bye, everybody. Happy feet, go da da, happy feet, go da da, happy feet, go da da, happy feet, oh, I love it.